It's time for a Big Blue Kickoff Live.
Nobody can ever tell you that you couldn't do it, because you did.
On Giants.com.
You know what I saw? New York Giant Prime.
And the Giants mobile app.
17-14 is the final. One touchdown, we are world champions. Believe it, and it will happen.
Part of the Giants Podcast Network.
Let's go out there like a bunch of crazy dogs.
Welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com, as well as the mobile app. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Medow with you for the next 60 minutes. It is presented by Cadillac, the official luxury vehicle of the New York Football Giants. Multiple ways you can interact with us here on the program. You give us a ring, 201-939-4513. You can also find us on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. And as a reminder, you can find the archive of this show and our entire podcast network on the Giants mobile app, podcast platforms everywhere, and at giants.com/podcast. So, draft week has arrived. The speculation will only be allowed for the next few days, and we'll actually be able to assign players to teams before you know it on Thursday, with the Giants having the sixth overall pick. And we're going to continue to preview the draft class this week. But this is the week, Paul, if you ask most executives, they say the week prior, don't buy into a lot of the noise and the buzz. This week, though, maybe it has a little bit more substance than perhaps the weeks prior.
Do you really believe that?
A tad, I would say. I believe it. Okay? That's my measurement.
Oh, my. I don't know if you saw the tweet that I put up the other day. I think it was even yesterday, with the big fog that was rolling in. You know, as far as I'm concerned, you fans out there, I feel so bad for you, because over the last 2 months since the combine, you have been nothing but inundated with fog after fog after fog, smoke after smoke after smoke. You have read so much drivel, as they say, and it's a shame. You know, it's a shame, because one person says something, one person writes something, and then it catches like wildfire.
Oh, yeah.
And then everybody else has to repeat the same thing. And before you know it, now it becomes a narrative. And the amazing part is, it just started with a spark that may or may not have any truth to it. But because it spread thanks to social media,
yep,
that's the time we live in, it now becomes the perception equals the reality thing. And, you know, and then there's the other thing, where how many people over the last 2 months have each one of your beat writers flip-flopped on something? Oh, they want McCarthy. No, they want May. No, they really want Daniels. No, they're going to trade down. No, they're going to trade up. No, if this guy's here, they're going to take
this
guy.
Every possible scenario.
Every other day, if you were to take the entire clip of every writer and say, here's your timeline, here's your clips for the last 2 months, just look at how many times they're up and down, they're up and down, they're up and down. They're all over the place. They're like a drunken driver on the turnpike. And that's just the way it is. And you poor fans out there, you're forced to listen to this junk. Or read it, I should say. It's a shame. You know, hopefully, I think we've been very consistent in everything that we've said here over the last couple of months. And, you know, hopefully that's given you some clarity as we get to the first round.
Well, and I think part of it is also, remember, you got agents, you have players, you have so many different parties, Paul, remember, involved in this process, and everybody has a different agenda.
No
doubt.
So I
don't want to necessarily put it all on the media. It's also the information that they're given and where they start to go as you get closer to the draft, because that's why we hear about prospects, right? They rise. They come out of nowhere. I keep referring to the year that Trey Lance was drafted by the Niners. San Francisco moved up. There was speculation that Mac Jones was the guy that the Niners loved, if you remember, before they even made that deal.
I know we want to get to our guests real quick, but the part of the problem is, you know, when I started covering this team 42 years ago, it was always, there was the media had to have two pieces of legitimate confirmed evidence, even if you didn't source it before you went with it. Now, if the landscaper tells you that they're looking at a certain quarterback, it takes literally half a second before it goes up on Twitter. I mean, come on. Come on.
Well, part of that, I think, is also the urgency to report the story first, right? As opposed to get it right. And you could argue that left and right.
It is what it is.
Throughout the course of the draft process. All right. We'll certainly get more into the game of speculation, but let's try to maybe bring in the mathematical equations as we gear
up. This guy doesn't deal in
numbers.
He deals in numbers.
No, this is all facts.
This is real.
Correct. 100%.
That's why I like him.
Yes.
We have him on the show every year.
We do indeed. And it is that time of the year to have him on again. It's Kenley Platty, the inventor of the RAS scoring system. You can check him out at RAS.football. And that, of course, refers to the relative athletic score. Kent, you got Lance Meadow, Paul Dottino here, Giants.com, Big Blue Kickoff Live. Greatly appreciate the time, as always. Hope all is well. How's everything on your end?
Fantastic, man. Glad to be back.
Absolutely. Well, before we delve into maybe some of the specifics, in case we have new viewers and listeners who are unfamiliar with your system, Kent, A, how did you develop it, number one, and why is it such a useful tool that even a number of NFL teams put a great deal of substance and stock into your calculations?
Yeah, RAS was developed back in 2013. This was the Le'Veon Bell draft. And he wasn't the only reason that I decided to develop it. It was kind of just the nail in the coffin of putting the time in to do something about it. But he had ran a 4.6 in the 40-yard dash, and the whole argument about him at the combine and after that was that he was an unathletic running back. And the rest of his testing really didn't say that he was unathletic. Even the 4.6 by itself, at his size, that was a good time for a guy his size. I really didn't like how we had all these different superlatives that we use for players. This guy is quick but not fast. This guy is explosive. This guy is stiff. You have all those terms, but they don't really mean anything if you can't quantify them in some way. What RAS tries to do is it takes player testing data and it compares it to their positional group all the way back to 1987. Most of the data is modern data. We do go back quite a ways, but most of the data is still pretty modern. And we just score it on a 0 to 10 scale. Everybody can understand 0 to 10. 0 is never going to be a good number in any rating system. And then 10 obviously would be the good one. And then everything's stoplight color-coded on the cards. We got red, yellow, and green. Very easy to understand. The intention was just to make something that was simple and, you know, easy to understand for anybody casual coming into it. But it's been a pretty useful proxy for what NFL teams use. You know, they all have some kind of athletic testing metric that they use, and RAS seems to be pretty close to a lot of what NFL teams use. It's nice because you can use it for projections, you can use it for comparisons, see the types of players that your teams are generally looking for. But it isn't hard at all to see where the correlations start to come in, and you'll see that as we talk about some guys today. But NFL teams generally draft the elite tier athletes early, and they generally avoid the lower testing athletes until later.
All right, well, let's go right to where we think the Giants are more likely to go, and that is with that number 6 pick at wide receiver. And I had asked you in preparation for the program, you know, let's take a look at the top of the wide receiver group. And I know that Harrison didn't do a whole bunch of the testing, which made it difficult because obviously you can't plug your scores into your complete formula. But to see what Odunze did compared to neighbors, and then to compare guys like Thomas and Worthy, there were some very interesting results that I think some people might look at and say, wow, you know, that's pretty curious. What surprised you when you looked at, like, those top 4 or 5 wide receivers? What kind of surprised you and stuck out? Like, man, you know, I didn't expect to see that from that guy.
Yeah, we usually have a 1 or 2, you know, maybe even 3 of the top, say, 7 or 8 receivers that don't score in elite range for RAS. And we just didn't have that this year. All of the guys that you listed off, except for Harrison, who didn't test, they're all elite testing athletes. Obviously, Xavier Worthy getting a 4.21 in the 40-yard dash, the fastest 40 we've ever seen. That's pretty notable. His RAS profile shows up exactly the kind of guy he is. He's explosive and fast, but he's really small and slender. And that's going to be the concern that some teams are going to have for him. They're not looking at a guy and saying, okay, well, he's a speedster and that's all that matters. They're also looking at how big is he, you know, if he's just a speedster, if he has anything else that can translate in the short and intermediate areas of the field. That's the kind of stuff you're trying to gauge from it. And he seems to have that kind of athleticism. What's notable with all the guys that we looked at in the top is that most of them skip the agility testing. It's fairly common for higher draft picks to skip those throws. They'll still do them in private for NFL teams, but they just won't do them publicly. Rome Odunze didn't do that. He tested out very well for his agility drills, and he actually stayed out at the combine to continue doing the cone drill, because even though he almost hit 80th percentile in the cone, which for a guy that's almost 6'3 and 212, that's a huge deal. He felt that he could do better, and he was trying to break 6'6. His final time was a 6.88, but he wanted to do better than that. He just kept staying out there and putting it. Coaches are going to eat that right off, and the overall athletic profile was already really, really good, a 9.92 out of 10, one of the highest scores we have for a wide receiver of all time.
On a related note to what we're talking about, Kent, with respect to the wide receivers, I think, and this is something that you could speak of, how numbers sometimes don't necessarily tell the whole story when it comes in comparison to usage in college football, meaning you shouldn't necessarily think less of a guy because maybe he wasn't utilized a certain way within the confines of the offensive scheme on the college level. How does your system navigate that, especially when it comes to specifically wide receivers, whether it be outside guys, slot guys, and you know not everybody's necessarily interchangeable?
So RAS by itself doesn't actually tell you that story, but it will give you a good idea of what a guy's potential might be. If you have a wide receiver who doesn't run a whole lot of deep routes, he doesn't tend to do a whole lot of yards after the catch and stuff, but the scheme doesn't ask him to do that. You'll see that sometimes some of the receivers in the Pac-12, formerly Pac-12, will have a lot of plays that they look almost like they're taking the play off. That's by design because they're taking plays off in between a fast-paced offense. So maybe he runs a really good 40, and you didn't expect him to do that. That's going to be notable. I remember when Justin Jefferson came out some years back, he wasn't expected to test out as this elite tester, and ultimately he did and got drafted fairly early because of it. When a guy tests a certain kind of way based on how they play, that's what you're looking for, how they play. When you had DK Metcalf come out a few years ago, he tested just terribly in the agility drills. You know, a lot of the media ate that right up and were complaining about, oh, but is he going to really project well to the NFL? But like, when did he do any of that in his college game?
Exactly.
When did he do
that
in the pro? You know, it isn't really that big of a part of his game, so it isn't that much of a concern. A lot of these guys skipping the agility drills, it might be notable. If you want to do some more creative stuff with a guy like Malik Nabers who skipped out of the testing, him not having the agility drills might be a red flag for you, because maybe you say, God, I'd really like to see him do more, have a more diverse route tree, and I think he might be a little stiff. And then if he doesn't do the testing, you can say, well, it doesn't confirm anything because he didn't test it, but it also doesn't assuage those fears. You know, I still have that concern. But with Adonai Mitchell and Xavier Worthy, the two Texas guys, I don't think that you're really going to expect them to do a whole lot of those little quickness things, and they're both explosive enough that you can still get away with a lot of that stuff and not have to really be concerned with their direct change of direction ability from a testing standpoint. If a guy does have that concern and he tests poorly, maybe that's a concern. But if a guy doesn't test in the area, you really just kind of got to weigh that with what you already know about the player and what you have with the rest of their athletic profile.
One of the comparisons that was interesting to me, Kent, was between Odunze and Nabers. You had a great score for Odunze in the 10-yard split, but only an okay score for Nabers on his 10-yard split, which seemed to defy the type of logic that we talk about, because Nabers is the guy with the quicks. Nabers is the guy who's supposed to be smaller, more nifty, more like could be a slot receiver. And yet those numbers seem to kind of belie that philosophy. And then on the other side, I thought it was interesting that Odunze's three cone was only listed as okay. Nabers did not do the three cones, so you didn't have a number for him. But what did you make of those numbers compared to what the narrative usually is about those two players?
Yeah, and I don't want to sound like it's too disparaging for Nabers that he didn't do them. I know I mentioned, you know, it might be a concern for you. His 10-yard split wasn't as good as a 10-yard split as you would expect for a guy that ran a 4.3. He had a very fast 40-yard dash time and a good, but quite that level 10-yard split. Whereas Odunze, his 10-yard split is exactly what you'd expect for a guy that ran a 4.45. He didn't run quite as good, but a 4.45 is plenty fast, right? In both of those players' cases, they're really explosive. Odunze had 90th percentile jumps, and then Nabers had 99th and 94th, respectively, for his test. Very explosive player. If you're worried about their stiffness and stuff from an evaluation perspective, that might be a little bit of a concern that Nabers didn't do the testing. And that 10-yard split, in other circumstances might be a little bit more concerning. I think that what he tested there combined with his explosive drills should kind of put any of those fears really to bed. And if a team is really concerned with what those agility drills look like, the team is going to have him do those drills in a private workout. I don't know who the Giants mess with, but if they mess with him and that was a concern for them, they would have him do those drills. Players do drills at private testing all the time. But that's where you gotta put your evaluator's cap on. And if it's a concern on tape, it's something that you're really worried about, and then the player doesn't test, maybe that is a concern for you. From an overall athletic testing perspective, neither of those drills are really going to do too much from an overall perspective. They tested well enough in all the other areas, but it isn't going to be too big of a concern.
Ken, I know part of your scoring system, especially if individuals check out your website, you also do a lot of analytics by team. And that perhaps could lead to some takeaways. Well, where are the tendencies of an organization when it comes to choosing a wide receiver, an offensive lineman? Where do they normally go? I'm curious, from your analysis of the Giants specifically, and granted, I know you take into consideration the history of the organization, but Joe Shane and Brian Daboll are relatively new as a combo. But I'm wondering if, when we look at these wide receivers that we're talking about, if anyone sticks out to you fit-wise based on what Daboll and Joe Shane may prefer in terms of their track records?
Yeah, we don't really have a whole lot to go on because, as you said, they haven't been around all that long. They picked up Wandale Robinson back in 2022, very small, shifty and fast receiver. And if they think that that's going to be the guy they want to use in that role, maybe you're not looking at a guy like Neighbors as highly because it doesn't complement the type of player that you already have in a guy like Wandale. You look at a guy like Romo Dunsey, who's a bit more universal in what you can do with him. Maybe you're looking at a more specialized role. And I think the Giants are picking a bit too high for a guy like Edmund Mitchell or Xavier Worthy, maybe looking at one of their other picks or if they were to trade back into the first.
Sure.
But if they're looking for like a deep threat type of guy, maybe they want to get some extra draft resources and trade down and potentially pick up guys like those or somebody like Brian Thomas, who also fits that kind of deep threat receiver type of role. So there isn't really enough to go on, but I feel like with a smaller, shiftier guy, they might look at a guy like Neighbors as maybe having some overlap there. And maybe even with Xavier Worthy, who's also a smaller, quicker guy. He's mostly the speed that you want, but there is a little bit of overlap there. Now, I think these guys are talented enough that even if you have some overlap, that's not going to kill your expectations for it. And I know we haven't talked about him because he didn't test, but when you have a universal player, I mentioned Odunze, Marvin Harrison also falls into that, where you can do anything with him.
So yeah, I think so.
Nothing's going to knock him off, right? Because you can do anything with him. But if you're looking for somebody a little bit more specialized, you got to pay attention to what you already have and what you need.
Now, based on your numbers, Kent, it seemed pretty clear that there was a three-player and then drop-off at the corner spot, another area of interest to the Giants, between Arnold and Mitchell and Wiggins. We all knew that those would probably be the first three corners off the board. Your numbers indicate they are easily the best three athletes at the position, and then it looks like there is quite a level of separation to the next group. What did you make of that when you saw those numbers?
Yeah, and I'm going to exclude the Kool-Aid McKinstry a little bit here because he is coming off of an injury, and I don't feel that he put 100% into all the testing that he did do. It was kind of just like, here's what I can do before I have to go to surgery. And he still tested very well, not as great as all the other guys, but still pretty well, especially for coming off of an injury. But then you fall into that next group, and I sent you the cards for TJ Tampa out of Iowa State and Ennis Rakestraw out of Missouri, but there's actually more than just those two. There's like a three or four extra guys there. Chris Abrams-Drain out of Missouri and a couple other guys, I'm not remembering right now. But we had a group of corners this year who kind of disappointed in their time testing, their actual 40-yard dash and their split. Now, individually, that's not really that much of a concern as long as it's not egregious. DJ Tampa ran a 4.58. That's not great. That's not even good. But it's not so terrible that you're like, okay, undraftable now. Same thing with Rakestraw. He ran a 4.51, and he had a really good split, which is a positive. But when you have a guy who doesn't run a very fast 40, and then you start looking at their other drills, and they're a little bit disappointing, Rakestraw ran a bad shuttle and just an average broad. MTJ camp, I had just kind of okay agility testing. That's where you start to get a little bit concerned, because if you don't have elite speed, you're going to have trouble lining up man-to-man with some of the receivers that you're going to face. And if you don't have elite speed, but you have elite quickness or elite explosion, you can kind of make up some of that difference just by being quicker or able to get up to speed faster. But those guys didn't show those traits in their testing, so it's a little bit more concerning when you don't test as fast and then you have other areas where you're a little bit deficient.
We're talking with Kent Lee Platy, who developed the RAS athletic scoring system, standing for relative athletic score, breaking down some of the top prospects as we anticipate where the Giants may go in the 2024 NFL draft. Running back is a position, Kent, that the Giants could very well target. They brought in Devin Singletary in free agency, former Buffalo Bill. They have some youth behind him, but it's possible they may look to beef up the depth chart. And we know from previous drafts, there's never usually an early run, at least on running back. So maybe starting in the second round or after, the Giants could look to hone in on that position. I know you gave us some of the cards of some of the guys that tested relatively high, Trey Benson from Florida State, as well as Will Shipley from Clemson. What do you make of this position? And from an athletic standpoint, who may be around once we get into the second and third round and the Giants want to perhaps address that position?
Yeah, we had a couple of elite tier athletes. You mentioned Trey Benson and Will Shipley. Those guys tested really well. But then you have guys like Becky Irving, who's a very well-thought-of running back out of Oregon, who didn't test very well at all. Running back's a tricky position because you generally want the best athlete, just like any other position, you generally do. But because there's so many different types of running backs that succeed in the NFL, you can kind of get away with having a guy with a lower athletic profile if you're able to use them, usually in a committee, but you're able to use them in an effective manner. You mentioned Devin Singletary. Devin Singletary had a 1.65 RAS coming up. He had a terrible test coming up. And Bucky Irving has a 2.22, so hey, better than Singletary.
okay.
From that perspective, sure, yes.
But you generally, I mean, you don't want to make exceptions be your rule, right? You don't want to always look for exceptions. If you have a team that really wants to get a speed aspect to their game, you want to get a fast player. And Trey Benson and Will Shipley are those types of guys. If you have a guy that you are rolling, you need to fill where you need to get somebody with more power who's able to kind of run between the tackles and take some hits, you're going to look at a bigger guy. Jonathan Brooks out of Texas didn't do any testing, but that's more his style. You try to find that type of guy. Running backs in general, you want them to be more explosive than fast. Speed is nice, and you kind of want to, if you're looking for that speed, well, obviously you want speed. But whether you're looking for a power back or a speed back, explosiveness is much more important. And those other guys, Will Shipley and Trey Benson, scored much better than guys like Bucky Irving did. And whether you're looking even at a guy who didn't test well at all for speed, SMA from Notre Dame, depending on a 4.71. But the rest of his testing was phenomenal, so you kind of have to weigh that option, too. There is that lower end that he falls into where you're kind of past the, well, it isn't a great time, and you get into the, no, that's a bad time, right? You're past the, it's kind of okay, and you're into the, it's bad. So you start to weigh it a little bit more then, which is probably going to hurt his draft stock quite a lot. Bucky Irving running a 4.55 is plenty fast enough for a lot of teams, so it's probably not going to hurt him quite as much. From a projection standpoint, if you're looking for a specific role and the guy doesn't have perfect athletic testing everywhere, that's not a big deal as long as they test well in the area that you need.
All right, Ken, so last position before we let you go, and again, we really appreciate your time today. Let's talk about tight end, another position where we think the Giants are going to show some interest. Again, Darren Waller is in limbo right now. We don't know if he's going to retire. We would think the Giants would be looking for a receiving tight end on the basis that they signed a bunch of blockers during free agency. Brock Bowers has an incomplete card. We know the stuff he didn't test on, so I guess we just push him to the side. And quite frankly, I don't think he's in play for the Giants at 6, and he's never going to get to the second round. So what's the difference anyway? But here's what I do say. So many people seem to think that Sanders out of Texas is the next best tight end on the board. Yet surprisingly, when I looked at your athletic scores, I saw much, much better grades for Theo Johnson out of Penn State and, of course, Ben Sittet out of Kansas State. Talk a little bit about those guys and what you found.
tight end is one of those positions where you really want the best athlete you can get. The best tight ends that you can think of are generally going to be at the very near top of their athletic testing. It's a very athletically dependent position. The Lions drafted Sam LaPorta last year. Very good tester. Had one of the best rookie seasons for a tight end in history. That's the kind of guy you're generally looking for. So when you have a guy with good tape like Sanders who doesn't test all that well, you got to fall back on, well, does he test well in the areas that I expect him to win in? He tested out with elite speed, but the rest of his numbers weren't that good. His agility testing was okay. He only did the shuttle, but he had a 77th percentile shuttle. That's pretty good. That's good enough in general. If you're expecting him to have a role where he's going to take advantage of his speed and his quickness, and you're not too concerned about being explosive and being able to burst off the line as quick, or of course your jump skills, then you're not going to really be too concerned about his overall athletic profile, even if traditionally that overall athletic profile has been important for tight ends. You can kind of, and I'm using the term as if it's a negative. It's not only that way, but you can kind of talk yourself into it, right? You can mathematically justify taking a player without those type of traits as long as they fit what you're looking for. But it probably hurt a little bit that you do have guys like Ben Stennis who tested elite everywhere. Every test that he did except for his five was over 80th percentile in that elite range. Same thing with Theo Johnson. Theo Johnson had a red mark on his profile. He had a just average bench and just above average three cone, but everything else that he did was top tier. It was one of the top fours all time for a tight end. On that same regard, we had Zach Leach come out last year who had the highest score all time for tight end, and he went in the seventh round. So it isn't everything. You still have to have that good tape to kind of back all this stuff up. But tight end is a position you generally want to have a really good athletic profile for, sure. Which is why Ben has seen such a big bump since the combine.
Kent, before we let you go, big picture question for you, because, you know, we always talk about every draft, which positions have the most depth, where you can wait patiently to address a spot. Based on your scoring system, is there one position in particular that stands out in this year's class where that matches the quality of the depth that if you did want to wait, you don't necessarily have to pull the trigger that early on that spot?
Absolutely. I mean, it's the entire offensive line in this class. The offensive tackles in this class, pretty much all of them tested extremely well. The only player that I expected to not test all that well simply didn't test, which was Jason Latham. Everybody else that tested that is expected to go probably in the first three rounds all tested very, very well. The interior of the offensive line saw the exact same thing. Almost every player had above an eight. There were a couple that were in the sevens. But generally, it's a very deep class for offensive line. We don't really see that with most of the other positions. The cornerback class, I mentioned that there was, you know, that drop-off after those first couple. But the depth at that position is very athletic. It's a very athletic middle to that position. Safety is actually the same. It's really weak at the top for safety from an athletic standpoint. In fact, those are the top two safeties we had coming into the draft season. Tyler Newbin and Cam Kitchens both tested well below average. They both had very poor athletic profiles. But the rest of the safety class is pretty athletic, so maybe in the mid-rounds you get a really good deal at safety and corner where you might pass early because even though it has those couple of guys at the top for corner anyway, that middle is a lot more enticing to the value standpoint.
Hey, Kent, before we let you go, I just got to tell you one thing. So I'm at the Combine, and I'm in the crowd, and I'm watching Tavondre Sweat do his 40, the defensive tackle out of Texas, for those of you who don't know. And he's about 6'4", 365 pounds. And basically, he kind of started a mini earthquake as he was running down the field on his 40. And I just want you to know, the thought passed into my head, I think his RAS score is not going to be very good. you have influenced my seeking of athleticism, and I just wanted to pass that along to you because, man, he was alone, and justifiably so, his score did not come back very good.
No. He ended up with a 4.28, which for a nose tackle, a 4.28, and that's below average, right? But for a nose tackle, that's actually pretty good.
Well, good for him. I'm sure he'll be glad to hear that.
Well, and we felt that earthquake back here on the East Coast to just put things
indeed we
in
did.
Perspective.
It took a few months to ripple, but it did make it back from Indianapolis.
It did. Yes, it took some time, but boy, did we feel it, as well as the aftershock. And we'll leave it at that. He is Kent Lee Platy, the inventor of the Raz scoring system. You can check him out at raz.football. Kent, always appreciate the time and the insight, and very much look forward to speaking to you down the road. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Kent.
Thanks so much, guys. Have a great one.
You as well. Our pleasure. So some great insight out of Kent Lee Platy. As he mentioned, his system has been in play since 2013. So it's interesting. You now have a little over a decade of data to collect, because I think what's also we didn't bring up with him, and maybe he tackled it a little bit at the beginning, is he now has more and more content where you could get a better idea of the average scores over the course of multiple drafts to see what a good number is and how much you should read into that in comparison to previous athletes.
And understand, his stuff is different than analytics, because what he's doing is he's taking the scientific athletic testing of the player's physical skills and abilities.
Yep.
And he's just spitting out the raw numbers. As he said, right? There are some guys, especially some running backs, who may not have great athletic scores, but their football tape is dynamite, and they wind up having good NFL careers. So you don't just look at the RAS score and immediately say, well, that translates to a great football player. He's not telling you that. He's simply telling you from a purely skills and toolbox perspective, this guy has this type of athleticism in his body. He is not drawing any conclusions as to what the guy's heart is, his guts, his ability to play with injury.
All those other factors that are influencing.
His football smarts,
yep.
Right? All of that other stuff, that's for the scouts and the talent evaluators to interpret and then come up with a grade for a player. He's simply giving you what is their physical skill set. And that's why, you know, I do kind of like dabbling in his stuff a little bit, because he's not pretending to be anything more than that. He's not giving player grades out like some other people do.
Well, it's a complimentary piece. If you're an NFL team, and there are plenty of teams that put a lot of stock and substance into a scoring system, you use it as something to measure up against your own numbers to see whether or not you're in the same ballpark. But to your point, there are other measurables that are far more indicative of whether or not a
question.
Player is going to pan out. And you can't dismiss that, and you can't overlook that. Plus, what you learn from a player in the meeting room or in the one-on-one interview.
The leadership skills.
To me, is far more telling than any number on a page. But as he indicated, the higher the number, just like we talk about, the higher the pick, the better perhaps the chance that the player will pan out. I want to focus specifically on some of his takeaways from the wide receiver position, which we focused in on, because mm-hmm. I asked him about the Giants' tendencies and the makeup of the roster and how he would interpret maybe which direction they go. And I think it relates to conversations you and I have had, especially going back to the mock draft we did.
Where, we've been on the same page for months.
Where Rome Odunze provides something different in
yes.
comparison to a Malik Nabers, who I love as well and I think is a fantastic athlete, but you could argue what Nabers brings to the table, the Giants already have a little bit of on the roster with a Wandell Robinson, and Odunze gives them a different wrinkle. And if you're, once again, if you're in the draft room for the Giants, do you say to yourself, you got to give Odunze the edge because he adds a little bit more versatility to the receiver room? It seemed as if Kent went in that direction.
Yes, it did.
Which is exactly what we have been discussing.
Well, that's why I tried to explain to Howard Cross the one day we were on a few weeks ago, and Howard said, well, the minute I hear contested catch specialist, I'm turned off.
I know. I've had a conversation with him, too.
Howard believes that means you can't get open. Well, no, Howard, that's not necessarily true. All that they're telling you is if the quarterback doesn't put the ball where it needs to be and puts it into traffic, this guy can make those contested catches.
He has a chance to help the quarterback.
That's all it tells you. Actually, yep. That's to be considered a plus, not to be considered a negative. I don't know where Howard got that phobia from, and I love Howard. I really do. But that's a phobia he's got to get over, because what we have learned, not only in watching Rome Odunze, but in also speaking to all of his skill testing and all his athletic numbers, as you just heard from Kent, his numbers are incredible. They're off the charts. I mean, he clearly is an elite physical specimen who has the ability to get separation, who has the ability to run excellent routes and get open. So the contested catch thing is just icing on the cake for him. It's not to be considered in place of. And that's where I think Howard has a bit of a misconception on the player.
Yeah, he just doesn't like the term 50-50 balls. No. If you have a heart-to-heart conversation
with him. You know, Plexico Burress used to say to me, there's no such thing as a 50-50 ball when I'm playing. It's 90-10 mine.
Well, and that's what I think Howard's argument is. But I think it's just more of a phrase to say, and I'm in agreement with you, there are certain receivers, and I'll even throw tight ends or running backs, where if you throw the ball up where the corner or the defensive player is in the vicinity, you like the chances of the offensive player going above and beyond to maybe make a play
exactly.
on the ball. That's how I interpret it.
Exactly.
Term. And I'll leave it at that. But I think he just would argue that it doesn't apply across the board. And, hey, everybody has
their own
tendencies, to each their own. To piggyback, though, off of your point, just to give our viewers and listeners an idea, the RAS number for Odunze is 9.92. Neighbors is 9.67. Now, both are fantastic scores, okay?
Yes!
Let's not go crazy. We're really splitting hairs. But it just goes to show you, if his scoring system is 0 to 10, and he has Odunze at 9.92, I rest my case in terms of the athleticism that a bigger guy can perhaps offer an NFL team.
Yeah, I think that answers any questions about his physical abilities to make a play and to get open.
Yeah, and that's why, once again, we bring on the analytics just to help pretty much make the conversation a bit more well-rounded. And I'm not surprised by the result, but I liked when Kent applied the makeup of the roster to the RAS scores. You know me, I'm a big context person. Mm-hmm. I don't like to just have a conversation on an island. I like to use it and then say, okay, how can we apply it to the Giants? And his response, I think, adds a little bit more substance to where we're trying to figure out where the Giants could perhaps go with that sixth overall
pick. I had a scout say to me that the few times that Penix was under duress, you know, he got erratic with his throws, and that Odunze's numbers could have been even more off the wall had there been more accurate passes thrown to him. So as good as he was with his contested catches, there were also some throws that he just couldn't even get to, which is amazing when you think about his radius and his ability to make big plays against other people in the secondary. I've been on Odunze 110% since the combine. I've never wavered, and I'm not wavering all the way till Thursday night. I'm just not.
But you bring up an interesting point, Paul. Before we open up the phone lines here, I want to expand a little bit more on that, because that's an example of you're not going to notice that unless you watch the film.
Yeah.
And you look at the plays that don't even result in completions, but you're just seeing, okay, how did Odunze run his route? And what did he do to try to make a play on the ball? Or was the ball thrown in a vicinity where, as good as Odunze is from an athletic prowess standpoint, good luck. He can't do anything to help his quarterback. You only see that as it shows up on film. There's no number that can compute my point something like that.
I'm going to throw one other log on the fire for Odunze. And again, this is just a personal preference. I'm not telling you what the Giants will do. I simply tell you what I would do if I was in the chair at number six. The other reason I would lean toward Odunze is because with his frame and his length, he to me, and I talk to the guys out there in Seattle who have seen him on a regular basis, he is a very willing blocker. Well, look at Malik Nabers' frame compared to Odunze. There's not much comparison there, okay? If you need a wide receiver who's going to help block downfield off the edge to turn a 5 or 6 yard run into a 15 or 20 yard run, Odunze's the guy who's going to do it. That's not a knock on Neighbors. It's just an added bonus that Odunze will provide with his size and his ability to get in the way and to throw blocks downfield to help his running back get additional yardage. I'm sorry, folks, but that's hidden yardage that a lot of people don't think about. And when I look at the Giants roster right now, and I look at all of their receivers, you tell me, Sterling Shepard was, even though he wasn't very big, he was a feisty blocker. Now, I'm not saying Neighbors can't do that, but it's going to be something he's going to have to show when he gets into the NFL, because at this point, Odunze is a better run blocker than Neighbors is. And it makes a difference when you have a guy who can do that and help your running game get additional yardage? It makes everything easier for your offense. In fact, quite frankly, just add up the numbers, it gives you more big plays.
Well, that showed up, I was going to say, when Saquon was a rookie in 2018.
Sure did.
Think about all the receivers. Go back and watch all those plays.
Mm-hmm.
There were constant second-level blocks by Sterling Shepard, Odell Beckham, and company that freed Barkley for an extra 5 to 10 yards. And
Odunze does it well. That's on tape. That's not a projection. He does it.
Well, what you're talking about, and I'm glad you brought up, because I actually wanted to clarify going back to our mock draft. If you recall, I brought up Stephon Diggs in the Neighbors conversation. I know I got some feedback on that front. Neighbors and Diggs are both 6 feet tall, but my point was, Paul, there are guys that may be on the smaller stature side, but they play bigger than their size, okay?
Like Shepard did.
Well, and I would say Diggs plays bigger than his size.
Yes.
Okay, if you look at how Buffalo utilized him, Diggs would box out defensive backs, how he was utilized in the red zone, the types of throws. That's what I meant when I threw Diggs into the conversation. You can't look at mirror images of players and say, oh, well, this guy's 6 feet tall and that's 6 feet tall, so they're identical. No, he plays bigger than Neighbors. And that's what I meant when I brought up Diggs in comparison. So there are also guys that are taller and they don't play as big as their frame.
Guys can play bigger even if they're the same height. They can play bigger if they have longer arm length, if they have bigger hands, if they're stronger, and if they have a wider wingspan. Those are all things that can help a guy play bigger.
And their fundamentals, too, in terms of how they utilize their frame.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that, I thought, was right up the alley of where I wanted to go.
Hakeem Nicks played like he was 6'4", and he wasn't. Hakeem Nicks, I believe, was only 6'2", but he played like a 6'4 receiver.
Yeah, that's why measurements and weight on an island, to me, is not a fair way to say how a player goes about utilizing that frame. That's the difference.
Odunze plays big.
Well, there's no doubt about that. But I brought that up because I remember I had made a comment. And remember, we were moving very fast in that mock draft. We didn't go on whole dissertations. And I think that my usage of Diggs was misinterpreted by many. And I just wanted to take the opportunity to clarify what exactly I meant by that. Just like Gabe Davis was another wide receiver in Buffalo. Now, he's a little bit bigger, but he also played big, even though he was more of a possession wide receiver compared to Diggs, who is a vertical threat. Few reminders before we open up the phone lines. Make sure you go and subscribe to the Giants Huddle podcast. You can check that out on your favorite podcast platform. You can head to giants.com/podcast. Season tickets. You can take your fandom to the next level with a season ticket membership. Stay connected to the club all year round, not just on game days. Memberships are now available for the 2024 season. To learn more about all the exclusive member benefits, visit giants.com/tickets. Limited inventory is available. And the Giants official connected TV streaming app, Giants TV. It brings you original video content and game highlights on demand and direct to Big Blue fans. Giants TV, it's free. It's on Apple TV, Roku, Amazon Fire TV, and the Giants mobile app. And from what I'm told, you can adjust the screen accordingly on those various devices. So if you wanted to play a little bit bigger than perhaps the device appears, you can at least toy and experiment in that department.
Who would want to see us bigger? I don't know.
Well, listen, hey, to each their own. You never know. We're just trying to appeal to all parties and so forth. All right. With that being said, let's open up the phone lines here. Donnie is in Queens joining us on BBKL. What's happening, Donnie? What do you got for us?
Hey, guys. Just want to say thank you again for another great draft season, bringing this up to the draft chair. Just
thanks for your interest. We appreciate it.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, just wall-to-wall. The coverage is great. If you'll allow me, I just want to say what I want the Giants to do versus what I think will happen.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I want one of the quarterbacks, one of the top four, and my main reasoning is I believe they'd all be an upgrade to Daniel, or at least on par and cheaper moving forward. So I think that'd be a good way for the organization to move forward, kind of reset the books there. I don't think it's going to happen, though. I do think Minnesota will get ahead of them. I think it's going to go chalk 1-2-3. Minnesota at either 4 or 5 is going to jump then to take that fourth quarterback. So what I think will happen is I do think it'll be a receiver at 6. I personally prefer Neighbors, but I do think it's going to be Rome. Kind of heard some things, you know, small rumblings that Malik may not be the easiest guy to deal with. There was the issue with the gun a couple years back that it could maybe scare the Giants off. And I do think he's maybe just a better fit with the talent they have. I also think they'll try to move down from either 47 or 70. They have 3 picks right now in rounds, 2, 3, and 4. I think they'll try to get to either 4 or 5 and try to stack some more meat there on the bone in those rounds. So just a quick thing. That's really all I wanted to say. I want to have a chance to call in before the draft again. Once again, to you, John, all the guys there, just phenomenal work, really, giving us, the fans, something to listen to every day. So take care and enjoy the draft, and I'll hang up and listen.
And thank you. Appreciate the phone call.
Be well.
Thanks so much.
Hey, Lance, you weren't on the show the other day when we had I'm forgetting now. Who's our guest the other day, Pearson, who said there was about 160 players, then that's where it dropped off? What was that? It wasn't Dane Brugler. No, it was one of the other guys.
Well, he was that memorable, apparently.
It was no. It was one. It was one of our draft experts the other day said that the collection of talent seems to drop off after 160 players this year. No, it was Arvy. Arvy from the formerly of the Athletic. RV, oh my goodness, why am I, Meroff? I'm forgetting his last name.
I'll look
now.
It up here on the
You know RV, he used to be in Minnesota, and then he went to the Athletic. Anyway, here's the bottom line, okay? The bottom line was, he does a consensus.
Arif Hassan?
Arif Hassan, that's it. Arif Hassan.
Wide left football.
Yes. Outstanding job of what he does. He's not predicting, okay? Like, I don't predict. I tell you what I think I would do. What he does is collects consensus picks from all these respected draft, mock draft people, and comes up with a consensus mock draft based on what's out there. He's not grading players, and he's not putting his own prejudice into the picks. He's telling you what the consensus is. Based on his computerized model, he said at about 160 players is where then you get a wide differentiation of players. So that's kind of where the drop-off is. That would be the middle, or actually two-thirds into the fifth round. I had heard from the combine days that fifth, sixth, and seventh round was really watered down because of the NILs, because of the super seniors, and the way that the class was coming out, that the last three rounds of this draft were going to be immensely watered down, and you basically, those picks are practically not worth a whole lot. So collecting picks later on in the draft, like Joe Shane likes to do, and he has already shown us that, you know, could be very valuable. You could, you know, you usually try to use one of those picks to see if you can get a diamond in the rough and find somebody. I was told that that's really not going to be the case this year. He seemed to indicate that his evidence, based on the mocks, was that you had 4 2/3 rounds of quality prospects before it gets watered down. And then you basically have almost 2 1/3 rounds of basically undrafted rookie free agents, of which a bunch of those guys are going to get drafted.
Well, even in good quality years, though, in fairness, the percentage drops as you get
it always
deeper into
drops.
The rounds anyway.
It always drops.
In terms of the player panning out.
But as you know, Joe Shane in the past has made it clear to him, he values 6th and 7th round picks. He believes you can do something with them, that those picks are worth something. I'm not so sure. Now, the Giants don't have a 7 this year. They traded it for Isaiah Simmons last year. They have a 6 this year. That's the only one that I think, for the Giants' perspective, is probably like, oh, well, you know what? I don't know how much bite is going to be in that pick.
And remember, I also bring this up, and I know they weren't necessarily in this spot, but highly unlikely you're going to sign all of your rookie class members anyway, especially years, remember, where the Giants had 10 picks. I mean, that's a rare occurrence. In all likelihood, somebody's going to the practice squad.
Well, now, they have 6 this year.
No, I was going to say, they're not going to have that problem this year. I'm talking about in previous years when you have maybe a high volume of back-end picks. Even if you have them and you like whoever you're going to maybe take a chance on, the chances of all of them making the 53-man roster is slim to begin with, too.
I would say this. If there's any way that Joe could move up, I think he'd be very, very willing, probably in all likelihood, knowing what the situation is. I think he'd be very happy to trade his 5 and his 6, to be honest.
Yeah, to move up to a higher
pick. If he could move up a couple of spots, you know, in the 4th. Or even the 5th round.
Well,
I think
he
probably would.
Commodity. Sure.
You know, but is someone going to take that, understanding that the draft is watered down on the back end?
Yeah, they may not have the same level of urgency. But you know me, I'm a big fan. If you could turn the unknown, a draft pick, into the known, meaning a player on another roster, I have no problem with that philosophy. And just real quickly, in terms of the last caller, I get the idea that a rookie quarterback is kinder to your salary cap, but that can't be the ammunition to take a quarterback. You can't say, well, I want to reset the mathematics. You got to like the quarterback. You have to believe that that quarterback is better than what you currently have on the roster, has a ceiling that is higher than what you currently have on the roster. The main ammunition cannot be, well, let's alleviate the toll financially that that position is taking on the salary cap. I would say it's a factor, but not the leading force. It can't be. That's when you force a pick and you get into trouble. And we've seen teams that take quarterbacks twice in the span of 4 years because maybe they were in so dire need of a quarterback that they sold themselves on a guy, and all of a sudden they didn't have the right environment to have that player reach his true potential. Let's head back to the phone lines. Anthony is in New Jersey with us here on BBKL. What's happening, Anthony? What do you got for us?
Hey, guys. Great interview. I actually, last year before the draft, I actually found out about Trey Hawkins because of his – I was checking out the Raz site, and he was way at the top. I don't know if he was the top one, but he was – I'm pretty sure he was like top three. So
he's got tools. The Giants really like him. He was very raw last year, and it showed. You know, he was a day three pick, and they thrust him into the starting lineup. It didn't work out so well because he was so raw, and they had to pull him back out of the lineup. But in terms of skill set and tools, it matches up with what the Raz score said. He has ability.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't really see much of it because it's hard to get Old Dominion.
I got you.
Footage. Yeah. But it actually ties into my question, which is the cornerback room. I have been really concerned about the cornerback room, not just about the obvious need for number two, I think, but also now transitioning from a wing heavy man defense to a little bit more zone defense from Shane Bowen. And I'm also kind of like wondering, why hasn't there been like as much noise about going CB in the first round? Because like you said, like you guys talked about in the interview, and it kind of lines up with my opinion, there's like three or four outside guys in the entire draft, like starting caliber. The rest are all nickels and like maybe converts to safety, you know?
Well, I mean, remember, they took Deontay Banks. So do you want to take a corner in consecutive years in the first round?
Yeah.
I'm sure that's part of the philosophy. And Shane Bowen, as much as you want to say that, of course, it's not going to be identical to Wink's system, I guarantee you, Anthony, that Bowen has had conversations with Joe Shane, the front office. He's told them the type of corners he looks for, the type of corners he wants, what he thinks of the guys currently on the roster. You know, you brought up Trey Hawkins. The way Bowen looks at him could be very different than how Wink looked at him. And by the way, on a side note, I just looked it up. He had a 9.82 Raz score, which was a top 50 figure among all cornerbacks ever to have testing data.
Yeah.
Doesn't surprise me.
That's how good it was.
That's how I found out about him.
Yeah.
So I was excited when we drafted him.
You know, here's
a lot of people are like,
if sure. I could explain to you why I think people aren't talking about corner in the first round is because at six, there are no corners who are perceived to be worth the sixth pick in the draft.
I get that.
I think these corners are all between 10 and 15. If you're going to talk about Johnson, or you're going to talk about Mitchell or Wiggins or Arnold, right? There are the three guys who separate themselves from the rest of the corners. All of those guys are outside the top 10. Now, where does it become interesting? And you and I have talked about this, and Lance and I actually agree on this too. We've also been telling you for months, if at six you get bowled over with a godfather offer to move down a few spots, okay? If you decide you're not all in on the top player on your board at six, and somebody wants to give you the keys to the vault in Fort Knox to move down to, let's say, Denver or Vegas or Minnesota.
11, 12, 13.
Because they want to go get a QB, and they'll give you the keys to Fort Knox to do it. Well, if you're not all in on a guy at six, it is not unthinkable to make that trade down. Now, at 11, 12, or 13, you can take any one of those three quarterbacks if you are cornerbacks if you want, and the value is commensurate. I don't know about Wiggins. Wiggins might be a little lower. But Mitchell and Arnold are certainly between that 10 to 15 range. So if the Giants were to trade down, I think that corner immediately becomes part of the playbook.
The other thing that I'll throw out, and I go back to what I said about Deontay Banks being a first-round pick in 2023, and I know you're trying to figure out, Anthony, how the pieces fit into Bowen's defense, but there is a lot of youth at that position. If anything, I would argue you want to maybe add a veteran free agent later this summer to help complement that position group. I mean, I'll walk you through. Banks is a first-round pick in 23. Cordell Flott was a third-round pick in 2022. Darnay Holmes, who was brought back, was a fourth-round pick in 2020. Then you look at, okay, Aaron Robinson, I know, has baggage in terms of injuries. They don't know how that's going to pan out, but he was 2021. Trey Hawkins, a sixth-round pick in 2023. And even Nick McLeod is not necessarily an old guy when he was selected by the Buffalo Bills. So of all the names I just threw out, if you're talking about need, to me it's more of a veteran, a proven commodity, more so than rolling the dice with another young guy in the mix, I would argue, for this position group.
You want two names to look out for at 47. I like Kamari Lassiter and TJ Tampa as two guys that I would strongly consider at 47. And to be frank, I think there's a chance that both of those guys could be there at 47.
I agree with you, Lance. Like, I would prefer a veteran, but I don't, like, free agency is done. I don't know, like, what kind of veteran are you going to get at this point? I mean, we could bring a Dory back, I guess, but I don't know what the cap space situation is. As far as, like, the trade back, like, as this process has gone on, like, I feel like that is the best option. I mean, I think Mitchell is a stud. Like, you should look at his RAS score. It's nice. The only problem is he played for Toledo, you know? But he's an athletic freak, and mm-hmm. that's kind of what you want in your corners. And the idea of having him and Banks for the next, you know, God knows how many years, you know, that sounds pretty appealing to me, even though the room is young. And when I look at the consensus board that you were just talking about from the interview the other day with Arif, was it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
There's some, I mean, if you really want a wide receiver, all right, you're not going to get a Neighbors or a Dunze, but I mean, you look right around that pick 47, there are some appealing names there, you know, with some potential big upside, you know. And as far as I like Lassiter too, Paul.
Yeah,
I think he's going to end up being a slot because of lack of long speed.
He could,
you know,
and, he could.
TJ Tampa, I've heard. I haven't really looked into him. I just heard like mixed reviews. You know,
size and length are his keys. The thing you want to remember, back to I think your comment at the beginning of the call, is that we're not expecting a lot of man-to-man press coverage out of this new coordinator. We're probably going to see a lot more zone because that's what he's played when he was in Tennessee.
Yeah.
Now he may alter that again. We haven't really had a chance to dive into what his plans are for this squad. But if he's going to play a lot more zone, well, that does play into the kind of corner that you may want to take in the draft. It makes a difference.
And the last thing I'll drop in here, if we do get, like, say, Denver's first next year for trading back, mm-hmm. that could be a pretty tasty pick next year.
Well, remember, Anthony, did you see the Houston Texans having the season that they did last year? You never know. I wouldn't necessarily look at rosters now and say, you know, they're going to have rough seasons. There's always surprises. And something tells me Sean Payton is itching to turn that thing around. Of course, he needs to find the quarterback and stability there. But I wouldn't jump the gun and make an assumption that it'll turn out to be a top five pick because crazy things have happened with the NFL.
Yeah. But to me, C.J. Stroud was by far the number one. I mean, I wasn't saying they're going to go to the playoffs, you know, but to me, it wasn't even a debate. I thought he was miles safer, at least.
What I'm saying is the roster was relatively young and unproven around him. And appreciate the phone call, Anthony. Thanks for giving us a ring. It wasn't so much C.J. Stroud that many people didn't see that coming. It's more of you look what was around him in a young receiving core. I mean, think about what Tank Dell did and all those other guys. They brought in Dalton Schultz from the Dallas Cowboys. I know he was more of a veteran, but, I mean, everyone clicked. D'Amico Ryan's got that defense to be pesky. So all of those things clicked and registered, and that's a bigger reason why they ultimately made the postseason. Cam Hart is another corner, by the way, that I wanted to throw out from Notre Dame, who I'm very high on, tested very well at the combine. I threw him out when we were making the pick in the mock draft in that second round. It was 2-3. That's why we ultimately went with Tampa. But Cam Hart is another guy who I think the Giants could very well perhaps target with their second round pick. That's another reason why I'm not getting so caught up in you need to get a cornerback early, because I think there could be some quality guys if the Giants want to address that position later on. But once again, don't overlook that there is youth in that position. And Paul, we did hear from Shane Bowen, by the way, when he spoke to the media the other week.
Not enough.
Well, he's certainly not going to give away his game plan, but what I found an interesting takeaway, he was pressed on what Wink did and how Wink was a heavy blitzer. And he even said, hey, I may blitz more than I did at Tennessee. Don't assume that what I did with the Titans is going to carry over to the Giants.
We don't know.
We can't also assume that just because he was a heavy zone guy with Tennessee, he may look at the Giants personnel, which clearly relied on man based on how Wink utilized them, and he may say, you know what, maybe I'm going to let these guys go more on an island because it's different personnel. Whenever there's different personnel, you've seen this, Paul, in NFL history. There are coordinators that have their schemes, and they fit their players into their scheme. There's also those coaches that say, I have my scheme, but the players I'm inheriting don't fit my scheme, and now I'm going to change things up. Plus, remember, he also inherited a lot of the positional coaches under Wink. So I'm sure Shane Bowen is going to the positional coaches, including Jerome Henderson in the secondary, and saying, okay, you utilize these guys this way. Do you think that's practical for us to carry over and adopt? Or do you think we need to tweak, and does my system fit a little bit better the profile of what we have currently on the roster? Any good coordinator should do that, and I'm sure he's having those conversations.
Well, plus in the case of a guy like Trey Hawkins, you want to see what kind of jump he's going to make in his second year, regardless of the system that he plays.
Yeah.
And then I hate to say this, but I also like to talk about Nick McCloud.
Well, that's why I brought his name up too.
We keep forgetting about him. He's a great special teams player, but he's also done well in the secondary when asked to play.
He has.
And then we still don't know where Aaron Robinson is in terms of his injury rehab. You know, again, another guy who has a lot of skills and tools, but coming off a devastating knee injury. And it cost him a whole season. One other name to throw out there for that last caller, Anthony, is, of course, Max Melton from Rutgers. I did not want to ignore him because he'd be another guy in that cluster you'd like to think about. He's got a little more length and a little more speed, you know, and so, you know, keep his name in the back of your mind, too, if you're looking for somebody at 47.
One last thing that I just want to add to what you just mentioned before we wrap up. Remember, Bowen with Tennessee evaluated previous draft classes. So I'm sure a lot of the guys on the Giants roster, Paul,
he knows who they are.
He came up in conversation, especially at Trey Hawkins,
sure,
who you just brought up, because we were just talking about his RAS score. I'm sure Tennessee and every other team noticed that and took that into consideration. So he may say, hey, look at this length, look at this wingspan. I can tap into it differently than how the previous defensive coordinator
did. We should ask Kent about the RAS score for Little Turbo.
Well, for, the running back. Well, I mean, listen, I've seen him. We have our own intel.
You like him, don't you?
Loved him, of course. Yeah. Like I said, he was an automatic explosive play every time he got his hands on the ball. But in fairness, I'll be the first one to tell you, as good as the Ivy League quality-wise is and has produced a lot of talent, there is a distinct difference between the Ivy League, South Carolina, and the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
But I told you this, and this is the one thing that to me is most appealing about Turbo.
Kickoff return.
He was, but beyond that, he was a core four guy. They used him on coverage, Paul. I mean, he'd make tackles down the field. And if you're going to make this roster, you need to prove that you could do that. So I would say he has the resume that even if he's not utilized as a running back, that he could carve out a special teams role in the mix here for the Giants. But we got a long way to go.
Yes, we do.
We got a draft. We got an offseason. We got a training camp. and 75 other things to throw onto the iron, as Paul likes to say. All right, that is going to wrap up Monday's program. We appreciate everybody tuning in. Today's episode of Big Blue Kickoff Live, which is part of the Giants platforms everywhere, and Giants.com/podcast. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadows. Stay locked to Giants.com for all the latest. We'll be back up and running again on Tuesday right here on BBKL. Have a good one.